Hey guys, it's Jessica.
And this is Kendra, and you're listening to
Lucid Lab. It's been a year.
I can't believe it's been a year.
Exactly 1 year since we started recording. Sitting down and recording.
And our first time recording last year in 2023 was St. Patrick's Day.
It was.
And we don't usually tell you when we're recording, but we will today because we're recording on St. Patrick's Day.
We are.
Again, which...
Crazy.
It just kind of
happened. Of that like 2 days ago. I'm like, oh my gosh, we're recording on St. Patrick's Day again.
And Jessica's like, we have to do something special. So I brought champagne this Yay. Morning. So if we sound a little silly, you know, tiny bubbles, tiny troubles.
Yeah, I got to go back to that.
I'm already feeling a little silly and I've had like 3 sips. So it doesn't take much for me.
And it is morning time and I don't usually drink in the morning. So it's a little different.
So if you hear some slurring today, that's why.
But I never do brunch things. So this is my brunch.
I haven't been to brunch in a long time.
I don't know if I've ever done brunch with anybody ever.
We're going to do brunch sometime. Okay. We did brunch in Vegas.
Oh, I guess I just considered that breakfast. Yeah. Well, but she's wearing green. I'm not. I mean, I have a Moldavite necklace, but that's it.
I am.
So you can't pinch
embracing
me.
My Irish roots. I think it was a couple episodes ago. I was saying that it's springtime in Colorado. No more snow.
Whoa, I shouldn't have said anything.
We got pummeled with snow last week. Not fun.
If you're on TikTok, you've probably seen videos from Coloradans posting their levels of snow. I think in Netherland, it was like
53 inches.
Ridiculous.
I was supposed to get a massage. I haven't had a massage in like 3 months. I finally arranged to have one and my massage therapist texted me Friday and she's like, I'm stuck in my house. She lives up in the mountains. And she's like, there's 3 feet of snow in front of my driveway. I can't get out.
I'm not going anywhere for a while.
So I didn't get my massage, which is sad. I did something cool this weekend. I've never been to a Comic-Con or an anime festival where everybody goes and they dress up. My youngest child is really into the anime and the cosplaying piece of it. I went last night because my youngest is competing in cosplay. So made their first cosplay costume. It was this huge angel character with wings.
Cool.
And they come out and there was probably like 100 people competing last night. And each one comes on the stage and they play whatever music they want. And they do like a little kind of runway walk or they can do like a skit. It was just really cool. I was there for like 3 hours last night and I'm headed back down there again today. If you've never been to one, I'm going to my first in Denver. It's called Fan Expo.
Oh, you're going to stay downtown?
Yes. Okay. We just rented the room. But I was going to tell you that one of the guest shows this year is Charmed. So it's going to be Rose McGowan, Shannon Doherty, and Holly Marie Combs.
Oh, so cool.
All three of them are going to be there. Last year, there were a lot of good guests. And they're just now starting to announce who's going to be there. So I'm pretty excited.
If Vampire Diaries, any one of them are going to be there.
You should come. And I committed to my child that I'm going to dress up. So I am going to cosplay something. I haven't decided yet. It'll be fun.
Last time I made something, it was the white and black swan for Halloween. And I did make the whole costumes. And they were really pretty, but it took a long time. It definitely still wouldn't be to the level of detail that it would require to cosplay, do something like this.
To be in the competition, yes. I am definitely not competing. I'm just going to wear something fun to walk around because everybody's dressed up. And you kind of stand out if you're not dressed up at these things.
I see.
As I found last night, I was in just normal. I was in normal mom clothes. It was very obvious. Everybody else looked so cool. That was my weekend. That's what I've been up to. And now I'm drinking champagne.
Yay. We get to record.
Yes. We're going back to hauntings.
Good. Because we need a haunting. It's been a little bit.
It has been a while. And I found this one through YouTube. I just happened to be on there and it was suggested to me and I had not heard of this place and it is actually considered one of the most haunted houses in America.
Oh.
And it is the Sally House.
I've heard the name, but I don't know anything about the story.
Yeah, it's got a really interesting story too. So the Sally House is located at 508 North 2nd Street in Atchison, Kansas. Atchison is also known to be one of the most haunted towns in America. And the other main thing that Atchison is famous for is it was the birthplace of Amelia Earhart.
Oh, and that's a mouthful. Atchison.
Atchison. I know. Atchison. I keep wanting to say Atchison, but it's Atchison.
Can you like abbreviate it?
The Atch. Atchison. Hopefully I don't have to say that very much. I did look it up and Atchison is not that far away from here. Like we could do a road trip on top of our other 20 places I've said we're going to go.
I know. Someday we'll actually have to do those.
Yes.
Anybody want to listen back through all the episodes
and tell us where we need to go?
Where we said we're going to go.
The entity that is said to haunt the Sally House is a little girl by the name of, You guessed it, Sally.
Okay.
And
I was going to say Atchison.
Some people see Sally as an innocuous spirit trapped there by circumstances that are unfortunate, which we'll go into, or others see it as something much more sinister. Mm. Some believe that the Sally house is actually haunted by a demonic force and one that could be disguising itself as this little girl named Sally. And even possibly Sally is there and there's another force holding her hostage along with some other spirits that have been seen. So this house is pretty interesting. So whichever one of those you believe, and I will provide details and you can decide, I guess, for yourself, but really you'd have to be there because every person has a different experience. It has become a large attraction over the last 30 years for paranormal investigations. This has been on many, many shows, which I'll go through some of the things that paranormal investigators have found there. And then tourists are able to go any day of the week as well.
Oh, okay. We should go then, if it's not that far.
I don't know if I want to go here after reading everything.
Or not.
I'm a little afraid. There are so many people who have visited as skeptics who now believe and don't ever want to go near this house again.
Ooh.
So there's some darkness.
Especially with my stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. Be careful what you wish for is what a lot of people say when it comes to the Sally house.
Mm. And I just watched something recently. Oh, gosh, I don't remember the name of it. But it's about this little kid and his parents are really cruel, but they were actually hiding his sister or something. But we find out that his sister is quite demonic herself. I don't think that's how they're trying to portray it as her as this spirit. But that's kind of what I think of when you're talking about someone pretending to be a little girl.
Like, yes.
And that's creepy. And I've seen stuff like that.
This seems to be, to me, in researching this, I always go in as a skeptic because it's just the way that my brain works.
Mm-hmm.
There's some pretty compelling things here.
Hauntings are hard for us because we both believe,
right?
But we're very skeptical in the beginning. We just are every single time we talked about stuff. And we're not trying to be like Debbie Downers when it comes to the whole, you know, paranormal stuff that we want to chit chat about. But it just ends up that way. But we do both believe. And I, as you know, if you've listened to this podcast, I have a lot of my own stuff.
Right. I believe in it. I've never had personal experiences. I kind of want to have one. But after reading this and hearing from other people who are in the same boat as me, that they're like, I think I believe, but I want to see it. When they went to the Sally house and saw it, they're like, never mind. I wish I had never asked for this. Mm,
yeah.
So I think a good place to start, because I already said that Atchison is also considered one of the most haunted cities in America. Let's talk about Atchison.
I keep saying Atchison. Is it Atchison? Sorry for whoever lives there.
I know. I want to say Atchison too. Actually, when I was doing a lot of searches on the city, I kept typing in an extra N and it, you know, pops up and says, do you mean Atchison? I'm like, yes, that's what I mean. So Atchison is the city seat of Atchison County, and it is in northeastern Kansas on the Missouri River. So it's actually a pretty town. It's right on the water.
Mm.
Very cute from the pictures that I have seen. It started as a French trading post during the Lewis and Clark expedition years. And then it was founded. This is not a great story on why it was founded
as
by
most places
white people
in America.
It was founded in 1854 by a group of pro-slavery settlers.
Mm.
They were wanting to settle this new territory at the time in Kansas and bring it into the Southern slave group of the Confederacy, I guess.
Okay.
So it was named after the leader of this pro-slavery group. His name was David Rice Atchison.
Ugh.
And he was a U.S. senator from Missouri.
I wish we could rename a lot of places.
This is one that should be renamed.
Yeah.
So this was an important town because it was right on the Missouri River for trade, obviously. And then also it became a big part of the railroad and it had a stop through Atchison. They thought at one point it would be the capital of Kansas because it was so big in trade and they competed for it. I was reading about how they decided the capital, but Topeka got more votes for whatever reason and Atchison kind of slipped into where it is today.
Because Topeka is a cooler name.
Maybe. It's probably something to do. It sounded like politics, like whoever lived there, who had the most money.
And I don't know the history of the name Topeka, so
I don't either.
Don't
I didn't have time. I didn't have time to look into the whole Kansas history. But Atchison was a shipping point for the local agricultural products produced in Kansas. And then there was a college that was founded there in 1871, and it's the Benedictine College. It is a Catholic private school. And there are a lot of stories even about that being haunted. I'll get into here in a minute. And then I already brought it up, but the most famous thing is that Amelia Earhart was born there. Her childhood home is now a museum that you can visit in Atchison.
Of course, Catholic schools are going to be haunted. Shit goes down in Catholic schools.
We know that.
And I do know that because my mom and her sisters went to Catholic schools, so I can talk about it.
So Atchison right now, as it sits today, is around 14,000 people. So it's not a very large town. Okay. I grew up in Belton, Texas, I think I've talked about, and it was around the same size. And I know how small that town felt.
Mm-hmm.
So 14,000 is not that big. Everybody knows everybody, kind of a town.
You know, you want something like that sometimes, but then no.
No, I don't want
that. I don't want that.
And interestingly enough, the town I grew up in had a private Baptist college in the town, too.
Private things just scare me.
Mm-hmm. How did Atchison become the most haunted town in Kansas? Like, why this area? And there's a couple of theories behind why it might be so haunted. Some believe it's due to the fact that Atchison is built on a large amount of limestone, which we know can keep and store spiritual energy.
Ooh, okay.
Some believe that that limestone has trapped spirits, and those spirits are able to move freely throughout the town. And that's why when I start listing all of the places that are haunted in Atchison, it could be the same spirits moving from location to location. That is one of the beliefs.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it's also why when we get into the Sally House, you might have a benign spirit show up sometime, and then another time a demonic force appears.
It's like a highway underneath the city of limestone.
Yes.
Interesting.
And there's another theory even beyond the limestone, and that has to do with how the land was used before the white people came along, because we know that America was covered with indigenous people long before the French and the Spanish and whoever else came here. So Atchison was a Native American town. It was a main hub for the Kaunza tribe many years before Mr. Pro-Slavery showed up. Not much is known about this tribe other than the fact that they were brutally wiped out. At one point, there was only like, I was reading, I think it was around 300 of them left, and they all went to Oklahoma and joined the tribes there because they were savagely wiped clean through smallpox invasions. And the horrible history of us wanting this land.
Land grabbers.
Yeah.
That's why we can't ascend.
It's so fucking sad.
Yeah.
And I honestly tried to find more information, and it was very vague on what exactly happened in this area, probably because a lot of bad things happened. We know that this was a main hub for them and that they had sacred spaces here. And we know that there's probably many buried in that limestone.
And savagely taken from life, you know, so bad energy stays behind.
So before I get into the Sally House, I just want to list off quickly some of the other places that you can visit in Atchison. They actually have a entire haunted history tour. They have a trolley that you can take.
It's a haunted town.
So this haunted town has about 8 different locations that you can visit.
Oh, wow.
One of them is Atchison Street, and it was once known as Ferry Street, and it's where back in the day locals would board the ferry at the landing of the bottom of the hill of this street. There was a story about a woman who was traveling down the road in a buggy, and she lost control of her horses and she plummeted straight into the freezing river and she drowned.
Oh.
They said because she was trapped inside of the carriage, her body was never found.
Mm.
And it said today that people walking along the riverbank of this Atchison Street have heard a woman calling them to join her in the water.
Oh,
that's creepy.
Yeah, that's kind of like the Bly Manor.
It totally is. I didn't even think about that till now. It also reminds me of like the sirens, the women call men into the water.
I wonder if the horse does anything though. Did the horse die?
The horses ran away. It said they became unhitched from her buggy, and her buggy kind of launched into the water. I didn't tell that story really well.
Okay. Well, sometimes I'm just staring at you and like half the story comes to me.
Yeah. Another place you can visit is called the Gargoyle Home, which sounds creepy in itself. It's also known as the Wagoner House. And it was rumored that the Wagoners accumulated their wealth through a deal with the devil. They constructed gargoyles in honor of their pact with the devil.
Oh.
This was in the late 1800s. And it was said that the house is afflicted by an evil curse because of these gargoyles. And there's a story that there was one homeowner who bought the mansion and wanted to remove the gargoyles, and he fell to his death while trying to do so.
Oh, they're up high.
Mm-hmm. They're on the outside of the house.
Okay.
There have been people who have visited and picked up paranormal presence there.
presents, like Christmas presents. Just kidding.
There's also Jackson Park that you can visit, and it is supposedly haunted by a woman named Molly. She supposedly moans and she sometimes screams terrifyingly, and it can be heard throughout the park around midnight or later.
Moaning Molly. Moaning Myrtle.
The story for Molly is she was a beautiful young woman and she was found dead in the park the day after her prom.
Oh.
She was found hanging by her neck on a tree. With badly torn clothes.
Ugh.
So it sounds like an assault. Allegedly, yeah. She and her date had argued the night before. And when Molly exited the car, her date drove off and left her in the park. It was never determined if her death was by her own hand or if it was a murder.
Why would her dress be torn?
Yeah, it sounds like somebody got a hold of her. Many witnesses have also claimed to see a ghostly figure hanging in the tree where her body was discovered.
Mm.
You can also visit North 3rd Street. Legends of this home say that a woman named Nellie died alone. She was elderly and a single school teacher. Supposedly, when the house was sold and the new owners began renovating, it did not make her happy. The thought is that she came back to avenge her house that she loved.
I mean, that makes sense. That's a story told again and again and again. It's their home and they don't want to leave and they don't like you touching it. It makes sense that it would be an old woman that lived alone because that was her
space, her sacred space.
Yeah.
There's also Riverview Drive Home, where there have been several strange occurrences reported, such as the television and stereo mysteriously turning on at full volume and noises from rooms where no one is occupied. Them. There's no real story behind that. They don't know the history for Riverview Drive, but several people who have lived there over the years have reported paranormal going ons.
They need to start listening to what the television and the radio are saying. Maybe the ghost is trying to say who they are.
Once again, if you believe in the floating spirits, it's not necessarily somebody who lived in that house. It could just be a spirit that happens to be under that house from who knows when.
Right. Yep.
One of the other big ones in Atchison is the Glick Mansion. And I don't want to go into a lot of detail on this one because it could be a episode on its own.
Okay.
It has a lot of brutal history in the house, so I'll just tease that and say that's another place you can visit.
Maybe even a mini episode now that we're doing those.
It could be. It is a bed and breakfast now, so you can stay there. Another place that's super haunted is the Benedictine College that I already mentioned. There are several stories from students who live in those dorms that were built in the 1800s and seeing things in their mirror. I have one story about a young girl. She was, I think, on her sophomore year, and she woke up in the middle of the night and she saw someone rifling through her things in the closet.
Ooh.
And she was like, hey, what are you doing here? And then the person just mysteriously disappeared.
That's kind of creepy.
Very creepy. I'd be like, I gotta go home now. She said she fell back asleep. And then the next morning she asked her roommate, and the roommate said, yeah, I heard something in the middle of the night. And then they went and looked in the closet and it was a total mess. So I wonder on that one, was there actually somebody in their closet?
Yeah, it might have been. I would trust it was just another girl looking for something.
But there are other stories about rocking chairs that are rocking on their own and hearing freakish sounds.
I've heard some freakish sounds here recently.
That's
that
not
I can't account for. And not like anything I've explained before happening here.
Uh-oh.
It sounded like someone pushed something from underneath my bed.
That's fucking creepy.
And when
creepy.
You're on your bed, that's really hard
and
to
then
deal
you just
with.
Freeze.
It completely woke me up because I know what it sounds like, the thing that I pull from out under my bed, and then I'm sitting there for a second, and then 30 seconds later it's like they were testing to see if anybody was awake again and went
God.
And I'm like, great, because the day before someone had to come fix my garage and he knew my code, and I'm like, I gotta change my code.
I gotta change
and
it.
So now my whole brain is in
did
that
I change
moment
my code?
Did I oh my gosh, he's in my house, he came back. So now I'm like all creeped out, but I finally got myself up and checked my whole house and there wasn't anything. So if it was, it was a ghost.
I would rather have a ghost than some random dude that knows the code to your garage.
Seriously. If you ever have anybody work on anything in your house, change it afterwards.
Yes. So another house that is haunted is called the Muchnick House. It was built in 1885. They had large parties there often back in those days when everybody partied.
But we don't do that anymore.
We don't do that anymore.
We just don't get as dressed up and it's not as
I sometimes like
frilly.
Watch these old shows and movies and I'm like, I would have liked to live in that era. But then I think about how much time went into getting ready and how lazy I am. I probably would have fucking hated it.
Yeah, I just watched that movie Damsel on Netflix with Millie Bobby Brown.
Oh, I haven't seen that. Was it good?
And oh yeah, I liked it. And my daughter daughter did too. And but there's this scene of her getting ready, and I'm like, hell no, thank God I don't live back then.
Can you imagine, like, they would hold on to something while people would pull their corsets,
breaking their
ribs. Oh my god. And then you're I can't eat or breathe tonight.
Like, I am in this big old onesie thing right now because I want to be comfortable.
I like never wear anything but stretchy pants. So, yeah, even jeans feel too constrictive at this point in my life.
I know. I used to love jeans so much. And now I'm just like, I can't really get the bend I need with jeans. The snap,
like, digs into my stomach. I feel like they always have. They always, well, I notice it
more now. We used to wear the kinds that showed our butt crack. So we didn't have that problem back then.
Maybe that's the difference. It's the high-waisted mom jeans that I'm wearing now. Yeah. I'm wearing dresses or stretchy pants the rest of my life.
Dresses and lace and cats and big hats and flowers and potions and
just become witches and embrace it. So the Muchnick house was having these parties, and one night it was an event that ran into the wee hours of the morning, and there was a maid who had worked the party, and she was running up and down the stairs trying to clean up and rushing from the top of the stairs. The back staircase, she fell to her death. Today, witnesses report that lights from that back staircase will turn on and off by themselves, and they will smell cooking coming from the kitchen when no one is there. The theater in Atchison is considered to be haunted.
Ooh, I like theater stuff.
Guests often describe feeling an unknown presence with them while visiting the theater, perhaps just sitting right next to them while they're watching a show. Others working in the building describe odd noises that are often heard, and they have no apparent reason for the sounds.
There's a couple theater ones I'd like to cover for a mini episodes now that I think about it.
I love that we're doing mini episodes, and now that we are, it does allow us to cover quite a few haunted places, because what we find is most hauntings are not enough to fill a whole episode.
I've probably started about 5 of them and I'm like, I have to move on. Like, this isn't enough right now. So
that's why I was so excited actually when I found the Sally House, because there is so much to this one that we could talk about it. I feel like it's Amityville, but it's actually real.
Instead of
what we found out. So the last place I'll talk about before we get into the Sally House is there is the Santa Fe Depot. So the train station. That's actually where you start the tour to take your trolley. So there's the ghost of Hangman Bill that reportedly haunts this depot. And back in the day when he was a young lad working on the railroad, he had a habit of hanging from freight that was being loaded on and off of the cars, and it got him killed one day.
Oh no.
When the cable carrying one of the loads snapped and he was crushed.
Yikes.
So today at the depot, staff reports hearing the sounds of footsteps coming from above, even though the depot does not have a second floor. So I guess he likes to climb on the roof.
Ugh, I don't like those kinds of death. Anything having to do with, like, while you're working or something with machinery or
it takes
scary.
Me back to the Queen Mary, because there were several deaths there that were workers.
Yeah.
After reviewing all of these, this brings us to what we're talking about today and the most famous haunted place in Atchison, and that is the Sally House. Events that have been witnessed by visitors to the Sally House over the years include objects in the home that are reportedly moved by unseen forces, an apparition of a little girl who has been seen by both visitors and those who have lived in the home, sounds of knocking and disembodied voices, mysterious fires are said to be started by the home's ghosts. And this one is pretty interesting to me. There have been physical manifestations by the ghosts, in that past tenants and even visitors have left the house with scratches and have been burned by the ghosts in the home.
Okay.
Footsteps have been heard running up and down the stairs. There have been a lot of electrical malfunctions. When we have these paranormal groups going in with all of their equipment, they'll have it ready to go, and then they'll go to use it and the batteries will be completely drained. There's also stories of those who go in to take pictures with their phones and the cameras won't work, or you'll go in with a fully charged phone and it will die while you're on this 1 hour tour.
You hear that a lot with stuff like this.
Yes. Investigators have also reported being touched and grabbed by unseen entities. And then one of the most interesting, and I actually got to see this on video, is they bring spirit guide dogs in to these places, and there's certain areas the dogs will not go into. So there's certain dogs that are trained, I guess, to be sensitive to paranormal. And you can see these dogs refusing to go into some of the most active areas of the Sally House. And to me, that screams dark energy.
Yeah. You see stuff like that on TikTok when people are like, my house is haunted, and people won't believe them, but it's the ones with the dogs who are growling towards nothing. I'm like, get the fuck out of there, because this isn't a good thing.
No.
But, you know, money, we're stuck where we are. That's what's shitty about things. But I trust animals.
So many psychics have visited the Sally home over the years, and they have confirmed the presence of spirits dwelling in the home, and many have actually communicated with them. Many skeptics have come to the Sally house and have left as believers, going, I don't have a way to explain that.
Mm-hmm.
We have visits by paranormal investigators that have provided audio, video, and photographic proof of paranormal activity here at the Sally house. The house has received coverage on several television networks, including A&E, the Travel Channel, the Discovery Channel, and the Sci-Fi Channel, as well as various national publications and radio outlets. I can't believe I've never heard of this place. When I started researching it, I'm like, how have I not seen this?
Because there's an entire world out there, Kendra.
I know, and I don't have time to watch all these shows like I used to when I was in college. What's going on at the Sally house? We gotta go way back and talk about the history of the Sally house, how it came to be, and who may have originally lived there and died there and is now haunting.
Mm-hmm.
The Sally house was built in the 1800s. It's a mid-century home. It has 3 bedrooms and 2 bathrooms. It's only 1200 square feet.
Okay.
It has a full basement underneath, which is always the creepiest part of any house. And it will be true for the Sally house. So this house was built in 1867 by the Finney family. The patriarch of the family was Michael C. Finney.
Is that Irish?
I didn't write down the whole history, but they were Irish immigrants. Now, there's nothing in the historical timeline of the house that would make you think that it would become some haunted place. There was not a lot of tragic deaths that we know of. There are actually only 4 deaths that were confirmed in the house, and these were all under natural causes. It was 4 of the Finney family members, and they all died in their like old age. So just typical of the time in the 1800s, you would pass away and then they would have the wake in the house. And those 4 were Michael Finney himself.
It's
and then
still deaths though.
It is. Yes.
You don't typically have 4 deaths in a house.
I guess it wasn't under tragic circumstances because a lot of times people believe hauntings are tragic.
We don't know that someone wasn't poisoned.
You're right. Even though they were older, maybe their
didn't want to take care of them.
I was about to say, maybe their granddaughter wanted the house.
Yeah, we don't know.
Who knows? But the 4 deaths that were confirmed, I will bring up Michael C. Finney, MC, becomes important later on. Charles James Catherines, who was the father of Kate Finney. I don't really, there's like a whole family tree to the Finneys. None of these are very important really to me other than MC Finney. And then there was Richard Edwin Finney and then Agnes Finney. I do think Agnes comes back up. So those are the 4 that we know.
MC is written in a mirror in blood.
No.
MC is said over speaker.
No.
MC is found in the SpaghettiOs.
Just kidding. The SpaghettiOs spell it out. MC was here. MC Hammer starts playing.
MC is the magnets on the fridge. Keep coming up with something.
I'm not going to tell.
Okay. Well, I didn't say it yet, apparently. So
no, you haven't guessed it. So the property had numerous owners after the Finney family. Though the home is referred to nowadays as the Sally House, there's actually no factual proof that a young girl named Sally ever lived in the house or died there.
Ooh.
But there is a story.
Okay.
I'm going to repeat it here. There are various versions of this story.
Okay.
So there was a Dr. Charles Finney. He was the son of Michael C. Finney, and he took over the house after his father passed away, and he was a doctor. He was the owner of the home at the time, and he lived there with his wife, and he would use the first floor of the home as his medical office, and so patients would come in and see him there, and then they lived on the second floor.
Okay.
One night, it was the middle of the night, he received a knock on the door, and there was a woman there, and she had her 6-year-old daughter with her, and she said, "Doctor, you have to help me. My daughter is complaining of severe abdominal pain."
Sally.
Yes, that's the thought. So he brought her into his office area, put her on the table, and began an examination. And while there, he realized that it was her appendix. And it was about to burst.
Okay.
It was on the verge of rupturing. And he realized that they did not have time to get her to the hospital. And so he made the executive decision that he would need to perform the surgery there right away or she would die.
Oh, you know, that is scary. My sister had an appendix that was about to rupture. We
did
were
she?
On a road trip on our way to Disneyland, and she got very, very sick. And we had no choice but to stop at a hospital in Kingman, Arizona or something on our way. And they had to take it out right
there.
And we spent several days in a random city.
In a random place.
In Arizona.
Wow. Yeah. When it's got to go, it's got to go.
Yep.
And that seemed to be the situation here. I don't know where the closest hospital was. Doesn't sound like there was one in Atchison.
And it's not like they have cars.
Right. This is the 1800s. Yeah. Late 1800s, maybe early 1900s. There's no time to this, but I'm assuming it's early 1900s. He was not a surgeon. He was just a regular doctor.
Ooh.
But he knew kind of where the appendix should be.
Kind of.
He didn't have anesthesia there.
Oh my God.
Because he's not a surgeon.
Yeah.
It has been said that he started to cut on the little girl and she did not have anesthesia.
Oh my God.
And so she was screaming at the top of her lungs. It was hurting. And when he went in with the scalpel, he did not get into the right location and she bled to death.
Oh my God.
On the table.
Oh my God.
That is the story that is out there. And that is why they believe this little girl haunts the home.
Yeah. He should have never attempted that.
No, but there is no historical record of this. But why would there be?
Of course, he killed her. Why would he keep record of fucking up?
So in another version of this story, which I feel like lends a little bit more credence to it, the mother of Sally was actually a maid that worked in the Finney home. She was African American. Dr. Finney was having an affair with her and she got pregnant.
Okay.
And the wife found out and she said she has to go. And so she left. And then 6 years later, she comes knocking on the door in the middle of the night because her daughter, who she knows the father is a doctor, Dr. Finney, is in trouble. And she comes to him saying, "Help me," thinking that he will help her because it's his daughter.
Yeah.
And the thought was that he actually would have killed the little girl on purpose because he didn't want his wife to
even
know
that she was pregnant. And let's use that word loosely, affair.
True. It was definitely not probably by choice of the woman. And it was said that the reason he would have done it in his house is because he didn't want to take the little girl to the hospital for fear that his extramarital affair would come out and ruin his reputation. To me, that sounds believable, especially when I started looking into Dr. Charles Finney. He was like running for mayor of the town. Mm-hmm. He was a very prominent figure.
Right.
He also, this is a really weird, just kind of side tangent. He was a very good figure skater.
Interesting. Okay. Interesting.
And he would compete often. And many of the times he would compete, he would dress as a woman and compete in the women's figure skating.
Oh.
Don't know what to make of that, but I did find that when I was researching and I thought that was very strange. And that's documented.
It is very strange. I don't know when it started that women were allowed to act as women, but, you know, because men acted as women for a very long time.
True.
In plays and stuff. But
so maybe that was the case, but it sounded like he had won all the medals on the men's side and then decided to start competing as a woman and was very convincing when he would dress as a woman.
Oh, he was pretending though.
Yeah.
Like he was like, she's like the Manning.
Dressing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know, but I did come across that. So he does sound like he could be the kind of complicated guy that was having an affair with his maid. I don't know. Or
yeah, that does make more sense because you hear that a lot. The men who have workers and they're taking advantage of them.
And this was super common. And remember, this was an area that was built by pro-slavery people.
Yeah.
They're probably not the type who, if they do have African Americans working for them, they're not viewing them as equals in any way.
No, but they view them as their weird little girlfriends that are like their property. That just reminds me of scenes from the Antebellum. Like, that's just coming up in my mind right now.
Our history is so fucked,
as
we've said on every show.
It is. Like, I can't even watch funny movies now with like references,
right?
Without being like, wow, America.
Yeah. Those are the two versions that are out there. I can tell you that in the historical records in Atchison, there is no trace of a Sally.
Of course not. That's why the second one makes sense.
But.
Oh, no.
They do find a gravestone. I may be getting ahead of myself here. So many different families lived in the Sally house. Most of those families that lived there were either single women or women with girl children. There were some slight paranormal things like seen, but nothing was really reported until the 1990s when the Pickmans moved in. And this is where things really come to a head. And the reason being, it was a couple, Deborah and Tony. And Tony was the first man who had lived in the house that we know of since the Fennies did not live there.
weird. Why just women and girls?
It's just the way that it worked out. The house had sat vacant for a while. It was a rental property, and then it was purchased by a man named Les Smith, and he actually bought it along with several other houses in the area as just investment properties. He was just buying up older homes that had sat for a while to rent out.
Okay.
And so Deborah and Tony came to the house as renters. They were very young, and she was pregnant with their first child, and it was a house that was bigger than their apartment because it had three bedrooms, and they felt like it was a great place. It was the right price. It's right on the water too. I don't think I mentioned that before. So it's a pretty location.
Yeah.
And they were excited because it was their first like house. They're in their young 20s. They're about to have a baby. But yes, Tony was the first man to live in the house that was not part of the Finney family. And that's when the story of the hauntings really began. And so we're in 1992 at this point.
Because of men?
Because of Tony. So the thought is that Sally, if she is the little girl and it's the story that we told, she was killed by a man.
Yeah.
In a very brutal way. And so therefore she doesn't trust men. And we'll see this throughout the Sally House hauntings. And especially when it comes to the physical manifestations, it almost exclusively happens to men.
Interesting. I have a lot of other faces on my face right now. But
so we have a man-hating ghost.
A man-eater man-hating ghost.
The only time that anything came out that the public knew about was from the Pickmans. But once they start talking, we hear stories from people who lived there before.
Yeah, because you can't seem crazy. You can't be witchy.
Remember, this is a small town. Everybody knows everybody. And in the 1990s, we're at 14,000 people nowadays. Back then, it was probably only like 7,000 to 8,000 people.
Right.
So it was even smaller. And we'll even see this with Deborah and Tony. Like, they don't want to come forward and say that they're experiencing some of the things they are because they don't want to be called crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very religious. I should also go back. It's got the Benedictine college there.
The Bible Belt?
Yes, exactly. Most people in that town probably do not believe in the paranormal.
Yeah. Which is so
church
stupid.
Ladies.
I have never understood religion, how you can't talk about ghosts, you can't talk about demons. I'm like, you, it's in the Bible.
You talk about spirits all
the
time.
What the fuck are you talking about?
You're right.
Like, I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So they moved in 1992, and the paranormal activity in the home began very slowly. They would have lights going on and off. They didn't really have an explanation for it, but it's an old house.
Yeah.
You don't think much of that.
Mm-hmm.
They also had a landline phone, which everybody did in the 1990s, and they reported the phone would ring quite often, and they would pick it up and there would just be static. And there would be other times Tony would pick up the phone to call someone and it would be just staticky. But then like 2 minutes later, it would be working fine, which was just weird. But you can't really say it's paranormal. Like, they're not thinking anything other than old house, old wiring.
I mean, they are new. They could be getting pranked.
Who knows?
Here we are, skeptic.
Always. They did have a dog, and they said often their dog would just be in the house looking at nothing and start growling.
Mm-hmm.
And they had decided, because they were about to have a baby, they were converting one of the bedrooms upstairs into the nursery. And for whatever reason, their dog would never go in that room.
Ugh, this kind of reminds me of my daughter's room. I heard so much in her room, but it was the only room I had the option of putting my daughter in.
At your other house?
Yeah. As she grew up, I didn't experience it as much, but there's definitely things there. But what do you do if that's the only place to put your kid?
And that's kind of where they were. It was probably the larger of the two extra bedrooms.
Yeah.
Where it had the best view.
Well, and it's
who
upstairs.
Knows?
Like, you're not going to put your baby downstairs.
Well, there's no bedrooms downstairs in this house. So the way that it's set up, there's three bedrooms upstairs. There's the master and then the two extra bedrooms. Then downstairs is like a living room, kitchen, and the parlor.
Okay.
I don't know what you call it. And then from the kitchen, there's a back stairway down into the basement. But the basement's unfinished here and looks creepy as fuck. I have pictures I'll share.
Even when they're finished, they're creepy.
Basements just have a vibe.
Yeah, because there's no natural light. And usually the ceilings are lower.
I think it's that.
Yeah.
And if you believe what is going on in Atchison, this basement is carved out of the limestone, right?
Oh.
To build a basement there.
Ooh, this is like Ghostbusters. You just need to put them all down in that basement. Lock it up.
The basement is where a lot of activity happens nowadays, and I've seen pictures of the basement and I'm a little creeped out myself.
Okay.
I would have probably locked the door to the basement so nothing could come up. Anyways, it started very calm, just these things they couldn't explain but weren't really taking seriously. I will say that Deborah does believe in the paranormal, always has. She's never had a paranormal experience before moving into the Sally house, but she had always hoped at one point in her life she would. So she's kind of like me.
Yeah.
Tony, on the other hand, grew up very religious in a Catholic school, and he did not believe in ghosts or spirits moving in.
Hmm.
Well, that's kind of the dynamic we have there. When this stuff is going on in her mind, she might be like, well, maybe it's haunted. And he's going to be like, no, it's an old house.
Perfect movie.
It's the start of a movie. I'm surprised there's not a movie of this, actually.
I mean, I'm sure there might be movies. So based far, on it. It sounds exactly like the start of a typical haunting movie.
So this activity had started about a month after they moved in. It was mild, but then it started escalating a little bit. They started feeling cold spots throughout the house. And as they started putting the nursery together, they set out lots of toys. They would notice sometimes that toys wouldn't be in the place where they left them. You just start kind of discounting yourself. Like, you're like, I feel like I put the teddy bear there and now it's on the other side of the room. I probably just forgot.
Right.
And that's kind of what they were doing at first. But it really escalated after the birth of their son. Maybe the spirit in the house did not like that there was another child there, or was it because it was a boy baby? Whatever it was, seemed to be centered around the nursery. Deborah told many stories of her putting the baby to bed, turning out the lights, of course, because the baby's sleeping, and then the baby would start crying and she would go and open the door and the lights would be bright on. And then she said there were times she would definitely turn the lights back off, calm the baby down, go back downstairs or go into the master bedroom, and then just a few minutes later go back in and the lights were bright on again and the baby's crying. So it felt like something was specifically messing with the child.
Like, you hear that a lot too, and there's a lot of movies based off of fucking with children because they're sensitive, they see this stuff,
right?
It's just a demonic messed up spirit or whatever,
like, who's wants just like to fuck with the baby.
Exactly, because they can. They're like, ooh, you can see me and I can mess with them because you can see me.
They corroborated this with neighbors, and some of the neighbors would say, yeah, we noticed that light was on all night or throughout the night, or come off and on. So it was happening often enough that they would move the baby out of the room sometimes because they needed a night's sleep, you know. Yeah. You're a new mom.
And so does the baby.
Yes. Now, one of the big stories that you'll hear in this is there was a night that her sister, I believe it was her sister, I didn't write this down, one of their family members was over. So they had a witness to this, and they were all downstairs just watching a movie, and then the family member went upstairs and opened the nursery door, and all of the stuffed animals were in the middle of the floor in a circle.
Ooh, okay.
So this is pretty creepy.
Yeah, that's creepy. It's totally giving 90s horror movies, though.
Yeah, totally. They were like, who did this? And I guess they had been out earlier the evening, and Tony was like, it's probably my brother playing a trick on us. So they put all of the animals back on their little shelves where they were supposed to be. And then they went back in there and they had moved back into the circle.
Okay.
That was when they were like, what the fuck's going on?
E.T.
They actually had a witness with them, albeit a family member, if you want to be skeptical. There was also a story, and I believe it was Tony's brother that was with them at the time, and they were in the living room, and they said a teddy bear started floating and spun around 360 degrees. So for whatever reason, the ghost really liked the stuffed animals.
I mean, they're fluffy.
Things began to escalate. There was one night that they said a teddy bear actually caught on fire. The flames were coming up around it, but the actual bear was not burning, if that makes sense. They were so freaked out.
Yeah.
They grabbed the baby and they're like, we're getting the fuck out of this house, because all these other things had been happening on and off that really freaked them out. It would me too. Like, if something caught on fire.
Yeah.
They're worried the house was unsafe, like it was going to catch on fire. And so they were leaving the house to go stay with a family member. And as they were leaving, Tony screamed at the top of his lungs.
Oh, he wasn't out of the house yet?
No. And he said something on his back was hurting. And so they went and got in the car. They drove to the house. It seemed to stop. And when they got there, she lifted up his shirt and he had three huge scratches down the middle of his back with blood coming out. I believe there's pictures.
But not on the shirt?
No.
Ooh.
It's on his skin, and it's in a place where there's no way he could have done it to himself.
Right.
The only witnesses are Deborah and Tony. So if you want to be skeptical, she could have done it, I guess, to him. But that was just the first. We have more that's going to come.
Okay.
They realized at this point there is something in this house. And so they sought the help of a psychic. Her name is Barbara Connors. And she was coming from California. And she visited the home just to see if she could get any kind of idea of what could be in the house.
Barbara is such a trusting name. I just realized right now. It's just, Barbaras can do anything.
So she's the first one that comes in and says, there's a little girl in the house. I believe her name is Sally. That's just what I'm feeling.
Oh, so if there isn't an actual Sally, she just started it to say something.
She said, there's a little girl named Sally here, and she doesn't mean to do anything to you. She's just trying to get your attention. And so as a psychic, she's like, we need to find out why she wants your attention. She probably needs something to help her move on. That's what psychics say, right? Now, here's where else it gets kind of creepy in a way, is that she asked the Pickmans, who else has lived here? Let's contact them and see if anything was happening weird while they lived in the house. And so they did contact the previous renters, which was a mom with a daughter. Mm-hmm. They were the only two in the house. And they said, did y'all ever notice anything? They didn't tell her very many details. They're just like, when you lived in the house, did you have anything strange happening? And the woman was like, yeah, the lights would go off and on, you know, some of the same milder things that happened. Mm-hmm. And she didn't mention that her daughter had an imaginary friend. Oh. And she said, my daughter did have an imaginary friend the whole time we lived there. And she would say, if things happened, it wasn't her, it was her friend.
Oh.
And then they said, what was your daughter's imaginary friend name? And she said, Sally.
Okay.
And so that's when it was kind of like this coming together.
Okay.
This makes sense.
So we can trust Barbara.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I'll be the skeptic. Yes, I think we can trust Barbara. I didn't look up her like credentials or anything like that. So it's really, you know, either you believe in psychics or you don't.
Yeah.
So with this, they knew that there was this imaginary friend named Sally who had never harmed the daughter before and had obviously been there. And so they took Connor's advice and said, oh, this is just a little girl spirit. She's trying to get our attention. Maybe she scratched Tony because she thought we were leaving for good or something like that. She was just trying to get his attention.
Mm, okay.
So Deborah starts thinking of this little girl as a spirit that needs help. And she starts buying toys and gifts and trying to help in any way that she can.
And really, it's a demon.
But the problem was, while Deborah was embracing this little girl, Tony started getting attacked.
Oh.
In very vicious ways. He tells of stories waking up in the middle of the night, feeling biting towards him on his toes, like under the covers. He would feel scratching and he would wake up covered in scratches.
That's total demon stuff. Biting of toes and fingers. And I've had finger stuff and toe stuff happen to me. That's not a little child messing with you.
And there are pictures of all of these scratches on him. And it manifests one day. He's downstairs in the kitchen. The other thing I guess I should say is that they work different shifts. So I believe Deborah worked during the day and then Tony worked at night. So they were like sleeping. They were never like home at the same time together.
Okay.
And he was home one day about to go to sleep and he had made a drink in the kitchen and he said he turned around and he saw in clear form a little girl standing in the doorway of the kitchen. And it freaked him out so much that he like dropped his glass and it shattered everywhere.
Mm.
And he drew an image of the little girl that he saw and they took it to the daughter of the woman who lived there before.
With her friend.
Yes. And actually, they didn't even show her that picture. They asked the little girl to draw a picture of her imaginary friend. And then they compared her picture to the picture of the girl he saw. And they're very, very close. Same clothing.
Mm.
Like a little, think of a little apron dress. Like Alice in Wonderland type of a dress.
Okay.
So that
was
more reason.
What about skin color?
She's always shown as a little white girl.
Okay.
So yes, if you go back to the story of if it was like the love child of him and his maid.
I mean.
You don't know how genetics work.
Exactly. It can be very light skinned.
Yes. And a lot of people who believe in the fact that it's a demonic presence said that it would present itself as a cute little blonde girl because that's the most innocent looking.
You can also get that. Believe, just like you said, genetics are wild when it comes to people mating and what comes out afterwards. So
whoever's genes are the strongest. And we don't know, even though she was African-American, she might have been lighter skinned. Like there's a lot of different things.
Yep.
So he saw Sally that day and he at that point believed that it was the little girl in the house, but he did not believe she was an innocent spirit like his wife Deborah did. He said, this is a demon from hell. She's scratching the fuck out of me every night. I can't sleep. And now I see what she looks like.
Or she's showing herself to him because she's trying to warn him of what is actually hurting him.
That's a good take on it.
It's not her doing it. She's like, he's a bad person and it's not me. Tell your wife, or, you know, maybe. Whatever she's trying to warn him.
They didn't communicate. He just saw her and he freaked out and she disappeared.
Okay.
He continues to stay there. I don't know why. A lot of people question this. Deborah says, and I'll read some interviews with Deborah later. Deborah says they stayed there because they were in a lease.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to sound crazy. You don't go to your landlord and say, I'm being haunted by a demon. Mm-hmm. My husband's being scratched. Like, they just had a baby. They didn't really have anywhere else to go. They had put down deposit money. There's a lot of reasons why you wouldn't move.
And sometimes you wonder, am I having a nervous breakdown? Is this why I'm experiencing things? I can't uproot my family. We don't have the money to go get another place. We can't get out of this lease. Like, you go through all of those emotions, I'm sure. And you can't just immediately leave.
And Deborah also talked about, you know, she just had a baby. She had the postpartum hormones in her system. Mm-hmm. She wasn't getting a lot of sleep. So I think they did discount it for a while. Like, this is just whatever. What really, I think, sent them into something's going on is when Tony got those scratches down his back.
Yeah.
Although I think the animals moving and catching on fire would probably freak me out too. So they were still there and he was getting attacked in bed mostly, it seemed like, in the middle of the night or while he was sleeping, if he was sleeping during the day. He did talk about one time waking up and there was a woman, a full-grown woman in the room. And he said that she was very aggressive and very monstrous looking, but she was dressed in like old 1800s type attire.
Ooh, I'm just looking at you with large eyeballs.
And he continued to get scratches. And then it took an even deeper turn. And this reminds me a little bit about American Horror Story, in that he said he started to hear voices in his head and he felt like they had come into his body and it was actually starting to make him have very negative emotions towards his own child and his wife. And he said it was very scary feelings, like he wanted to hurt Deborah.
Oh, like Amityville.
Yes.
Like the with Ryan Reynolds, that version.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he said that one night he woke up and there was a monstrous demon looking animal. He couldn't quite describe what animal it was, except it was just like a mangy looking beast by the side of the bed growling at him.
Mm.
And it did manifest these intrusive thoughts, I guess is what you would call them. They had a cat in the house, and this is, I guess, trigger warning, very sad. He said he felt compelled and like something overtook him and he doesn't remember it. He kind of blacks out and he wakes up and he has stabbed the cat with a kitchen knife. He killed their own animal. So it sounds possession. Sounds like some kind of spiritual possession of him.
Yep, definitely something like that. And they always go after the cats because the cats
are the spiritual ones.
Exactly.
And so this was kind of like the final straw. Mm-hmm. And they did move out of the house. Deborah's like, it wasn't even just Deborah. It was Tony, because he was afraid he was going to
hurt
somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it was a very real possibility that he would have hurt his wife or his child. Yeah. He just killed their family cat in the kitchen.
Oh, I feel like, I don't know how long this story has been told, but it sounds similar to a lot of things that have come out since.
Yeah, this was 1992.
Yeah.
They ended up living there for 2 years. So from 1992 to 1994, after this happened and he couldn't sleep, he was like becoming a different version of himself. Deborah said he didn't look like himself, kind of just deteriorated in so many ways. They had to move out of the house. So their lease ended. I don't know if they moved out when their lease ended or if it was before, but somebody kills your family cat, you're gonna get the fuck out of there.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, like, if I was married to a man who killed our family animal, I don't know that I'd want to live next to him for a while.
Unless she truly believed. She must have truly believed that it wasn't him and something was happening.
Yeah, because he probably acted like normal Tony most of the time, and then other times.
Well, and then once they actually leave, then she can base it off of that as well if it stops.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it can't follow you.
So Debbie Pickman admitted now that while she was taking care of this little girl, Sally, that she believed was a lonely little girl who just needed help, she now believes that there actually was a demon that was either posing as this innocent child or was holding her hostage and using her.
Yeah.
So that's her theory now. But when she was in it, there was actually talk about them having fights because he wanted to leave the house and she thought that they needed to stay there and help this little girl out. So she became very connected. And some of the thoughts that I've heard when listening to other podcasts that have done this is some believe that this force could have been manipulating their emotions in different ways.
Sure.
So they were showing up to her as this little innocent girl and making her feel sorry and maybe even pinning them against husband, each other. Exactly. Yeah. And then her husband's being tortured. And then the baby was never really being tortured other than the lights coming off and on. So they were keeping the baby awake, but they weren't physically touching the child, at least.
The baby was just another trigger of a presence because it could see what was happening. Yeah. Or whatever.
So after they moved out, Debbie was just, it became her new focus to figure out what the fuck was happening to them and what was in that house. And so she invited her psychic friend Barbara back. Barbara said, I'm out in California. I can help you. There's a show called Sightings. There's Unsolved Mysteries.
Okay.
Those are some of the big ones. And yeah, she's like, I have connections. If you want them to come out to the house, I can help arrange that. And Debbie was very cautious of this because they still lived in Atchison. I guess I should have mentioned they grew up in the area.
Oh, okay.
They had family there.
Okay.
They didn't want to be seen on national television show.
No prank calls that I assumed.
No.
Before.
I should have said that earlier. They had a large amount of family and they didn't want to be seen as crazy. Tony's family was super religious. So they weren't going to go on shows and say, we live in a haunted house. This is happening. So they were keeping some of this really quiet. But Barbara convinced them that they deserve to know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did invite the show Sightings to this house. And they said, you can come in, we'll be on camera, but blur our faces and don't use our real names.
Okay.
And so I bring this up because a lot of people always say that people want the fame that comes with this. The Pickmans were not looking for any of that.
Yeah.
But they did invite this camera crew in and this paranormal investigation. And they came in with like millions of dollars worth of investigative equipment.
Wow.
And they sat there for a couple weeks.
Wow, that's a long time to do that.
You can watch the Sightings episodes. They're still to this day considered one of the most compelling shows for paranormal because they caught some things on tape that can't be explained. Not only did they capture like EVPs and things like that that people can discount, they caught actual scratches happening on Tony.
In real time.
In real time.
Wow.
He was sitting in a chair. They had him where someone was watching him 24/7 and scratches kept appearing on him, and not just like scratches, they were bleeding. I was looking into like what parlor tricks, you know, that people will say can be done that could even mimic something like that. And there is one dermatological syndrome that can cause scratches to just seem to appear on your body. And it's called dermographism. With dermographism, it is kind of like an allergic reaction. So if somebody touches their skin very lightly, 15 minutes later, it can appear to be like a raised welt.
I mean, yeah, I've seen that all the time, but not bleeding.
That's the biggest thing.
I can do that. It's all about stuff going on in your body. But I've had times where I can do that to myself or my daughter. Like it's all about what's your chemistry at that point in your life or whatever. But
for the bleeding.
Bleeding.
And I have pictures and I will put this on Instagram and you can watch this video. It's on YouTube. Maybe I'll put this in the show links if you want to watch it, because it was, to me, pretty hard to discount.
Is it instantaneous? You can see the scratches going down and it's bleeding?
Like, yes, as
it's
pretty happening? Much. Yes.
That's not that either. That's something that like comes up over time and it's not even going to be exactly the same on all three or four or five lines.
And there were like 20 plus people in the house and they said the only time Tony was not being watched was when he'd go use the bathroom. Even then, like he wasn't in the bathroom for long periods of time. And the places where the scratches were happening, even if he did have this syndrome and could do it, like it's not places he could have reached unless he had like a back scratcher or something.
Yeah.
So.
But to bleed. That's not.
Yes, no, these are like deep scratches, like if a cat scratched you.
Yeah, that's what I've been imagining.
And they would stay on his body for days.
Yeah.
From what I looked at with dermographism, they go away
after
a while because they're more like hives.
Right, exactly. That's exactly what it is. It's just an irritation of the skin.
It's an allergic reaction.
Right. Nothing more than that. And that kind of thing goes away within a few hours.
The Pickmans were not living there anymore, but so many people wanted to come and investigate after the sightings. They would always ask Tony to come back, and he would for a while, but every time he went back in that house, he would end up with scratches. And eventually he quit going. He's like, I can't do this anymore. So one of the biggest manifestations that happened on Tony, and I don't know if there's pictures of this, but at one point in his back, the letters M, C were scratched. And so that started a whole theory that Michael C. Finney was the true demonic spirit living in the house. We don't know anything about him. We just know he was the builder of the house and he came from Ireland. But there became this whole theory that he was like the lead spirit in the house and he was holding Sally hostage and maybe that other woman.
Oh.
I think I mentioned earlier when I said the four people who died in the house, there was an Agnes who died and mm-hmm. they believe maybe that was the woman that Tony saw who was dressed in the 1800s.
Okay.
And they believe maybe she was coming to warn him as well and that she was actually a good spirit.
So I just thought about, you said they grew up in the area. What if Tony is of the lineage of the Finneys?
I don't know. I didn't see anything of that. That would be a very interesting take. Maybe, I mean, he could even be like an illegitimate child.
Something's going on. Yeah.
There is some reason that it was very focused on Tony because yeah, Deborah and their baby, they were never attacked
they were just,
in any
they just
physical
saw
way.
Stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was another story. There was like a Raggedy Ann type doll. They had a birthday party for their child and there were quite a few people there and the Raggedy Ann doll did catch on fire in front of everyone. So that was another story that is hard to discount because mm-hmm. several people saw it.
Right.
During this gathering of paranormal investigators coming in, Peter James, and I actually mentioned him in the Queen Mary episode. Peter James was the one that came in and found the little girl by the pool.
Okay.
If you remember that. He came in and he saw Sally, and this was before the sightings episode aired, but he came in and he walked into the house and he said that he saw a little girl standing at the top of the stairs
mm-hmm.
and that her name was Sally. He said that she died in the house and they went and did an investigation in the local graveyard.
Oh.
And they were just looking everywhere for the name Sally and there was no Sally, but they did find one gravestone way on the edge of the local Atchison cemetery. I can't remember the name of it. And it was a very old gravestone and it was kind of weathered.
Mm-hmm.
And they did find Sally as the name. It did show that if you look at the dates of when the person was born named Sally and when they died, it wasn't a child.
It was or wasn't?
It was a child.
Okay.
I don't remember the exact age or dates. I didn't write this down, so I'm trying to tell this from memory. But when Deborah started doing her research into the history of Atchison and who this could be, she came across two potential people. And the thought was one was just Sally, who was a child. And then there was another that was an African-American woman who died and had like 14 children.
Wow.
Could this have been the maid that showed up? Is it possible that he killed both of them? And they were buried together here. So there is speculation about that. And we don't really have answers.
Right.
But there is a headstone there. And people, I believe, can still visit it today in Atchison. And it does say Sally. But there is no historical record to who this person could really be.
Wow.
Deborah also did write a book. And you can read a book all about her account of living in the house. It's called The Sally House Haunting.
Okay.
Deborah and Tony do interviews still to this day. And there's a lot out there. Several podcasts have sat down with them. I listened to several with them. And they come across as very just normal couple. I don't feel like they were seeking fame or anything that people always accuse.
Okay. They're still together.
They're not Amityville. They are still together. They've been married a long time now.
At least 30 years.
I think they still just have the one son. They work with paranormal investigators. They've returned to the house several times. They will not anymore. Tony has said no more.
Yeah.
He's done because he was attacked. The last time they returned to the house, they actually did a seance there with some psychics. And in the middle of the seance, he started screaming at the top of his lungs and he pulled back his shirt and he had three large scratches across his stomach.
Ooh.
So he's done.
He's like, I'm done being the guinea pig.
Exactly. He's the one when he goes in there and he's like, you know what? I don't want to do this for other people's entertainment anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There was also a very scary situation when he was in the house one time and he was actually thrown down by some kind of force and held down like he could not get up. And if you see Tony, he's like a bodybuilder dude. He's not like some little wimp of a guy.
Was that how he was back then or did he become that?
I think he became that. I've seen pictures of them when they first moved into the house and now, so I definitely think he has built his body up.
That's how he's dealing with his stress and trauma from everything.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But he was held down and could not get up off the floor.
Mm.
And that, I think, also scared him to the point that he didn't want to be in the house ever again.
Okay.
And you're going to hear this from some other stories when I talk about other paranormal investigators that have gone in there. Whatever entity is in this house has some kind of way about them that makes people never want to go back to this home. It does lend to the thought that maybe it is demonic.
It always makes me wonder about the people who work there.
So in some of these interviews, there was a question to Deborah, why did you stay there? Because yeah. I think that's the biggest thing. And she talks about the fact that she was always fascinated by the paranormal. And when it first started happening, she was excited.
Mm.
And she wanted to stay there and she wanted to communicate with this little girl. And she said that her and Tony dealt with it in a very different way. She was ecstatic. She wanted to continue to experience this and get to know this little girl, ghost. And then Tony, she said, on the other hand, was very all about his religious teachings and the beliefs that he was brought up with. He felt like spirits were an unnatural occurrence and he thought that they were all bad.
Okay.
So she was wondering if the way that they approached it also lended to how they were treated by the spirits.
Possible.
She did say that it caused problems within their marriage because Tony thought that she was a complete psycho for wanting to continue to live there and communicate with these spirits while he was having physical symptoms from it.
You don't care about me.
Yeah. And yeah. She's like, this is my one chance to like,
I don't matter. Connect.
And she said that there was something about the little girl spirit that kind of brought out the maternal side of her.
Oh,
and
that
maybe
does feel manipulative.
It does. Or maybe that little girl really was needing help.
Yeah.
And she saw Deborah as her way to get away from whatever, if it's Michael C. Finney or some other demon that has her trapped there.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary when you think about it. The only other thing I want to say about her interview is people ask her about why she would have gone out and looked for national TV shows to come in and that she's been accused of making money. And she said very clearly, money was never a factor. And she said, in fact, it was never even offered to us in the beginning and that she's done a lot of public speaking and things for free. Mm-hmm. She said she wrote the book just because she needed to get the story off of her chest. It wasn't something that she did seeking money.
Mm-hmm.
So she wanted it to be very clear. She also brings up the fact that they didn't want to be seen, that they had their faces blurred for a reason. She's like, we're not out here seeking money or fame from this. And she said, if you knew Tony, you would know that he's kind of an introvert. He's very private. And she was the one that had to convince him to let people come in to do the stories in the first place. So I don't get the impression from these two people that they were out there looking for it. Counted the Amityville. I don't see that with the Sally house. They still live in Atchison in a very modest home.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a long time to stick around in a small area.
It's where they're from.
Yeah.
It's where their family is. They're not leaving, but it is good for those who want to come and see the Sally house. The Pickmans are there, so a lot of people are able to interview them. So with that, I want to talk about what happened after the Pickmans moved out of the house and where it is today. So Les Smith still owns the home, and for a while he did rent it out. People knew at that point it was haunted, and he got a call about a woman who was living there alone, that someone, I guess, who went to visit her, that she was doing something to his property, like not taking care of it. And so he went in just to do like a landlord would do. And he said the house was a complete disaster and like the carpet was torn up and the railing on the stairs had been destroyed, falling off or whatever. But the most disturbing thing he found when he went in the house is down in the basement.
Oh, she digging up looking for bones?
There was a pentagram drawn in the basement and there were weird names written like in paint around the pentagram. So it was obvious she was doing some kind of conjuring.
Yeah.
She got kicked out of the house and he did spray paint over with very thick black paint, the pentagram. But you can still see that if you go in the basement today, you'll see the big black paint. And some people say you can still kind of see the outline of the pentagram.
Is it on the floor?
It's on the floor.
Oh, okay.
And there were some names written around it. So I don't know if she was...
Usually the names are words to conjure a certain demon or something like that, right?
And that's the thought, is some people think that she was conjuring demons, knowing that this was a paranormal place. So that makes you wonder. Nobody knows more about it, except there was a woman there and there was a pentagram.
She didn't want a real man. She wanted a demon man.
Maybe.
A boyfriend.
There's also thought that she may have invited other people over. There could have been rituals going on in this house. He doesn't know until he went in.
Yeah.
And something to mention about Les Smith is that he was a retired police officer. So he was a police officer in Atchison for like 28 years. He does not believe in the paranormal. We'll have a couple of stories from him here in a minute. But when he saw the pentagram, because he had been in police work, he said it brought him back to when they had found a group of, call them devil worshipers, whatever, in a cave outside of Atchison. And he said the pentagram was the same. So like he knew it was very clearly connected to that same kind of cultish group. So he was a little freaked out. After this, he stopped renting the house out. And that's when the Chamber of Commerce approached him and mentioned that it could be used as
a historical
home or part of the Atchison haunting tours. He didn't really open it up for the public at this time. He had been approached by so many paranormal investigators and TV shows that wanted to come into the house that he was able to really kind of, I guess, cover his rent that way, is just having people come in and stay at the house and do investigations.
Okay.
So that's what happened for the next few years before it became this tourist attraction that it is today. There is one group I will mention.
Okay.
His name is Tim Wood, and he runs a website called livesci-fi.tv. He's controversial, but I'm going to bring it up because it is something that they did find in the house that could lend to something going on there. So they were there in 2011 doing their form of investigation. He's controversial because they're the type of group that every house they go in, they find something.
People
think that they might do some of the fake things to make.
Right.
But what they did find in 2011 at the Sally House was a sweater that was covered in blood, and it was in the attic of the house, hidden underneath insulation.
Okay.
What was known about this sweater that was found is that it was from the Sears and Roebuck company. They were able to ascertain that it came from the 1970 to 1996 time frame. There were puncture holes in the front and back of the sweater, and there were blood stains concentrated in the lower stomach region of the sweater, both back and front, and there were blood stains on the right elbow.
Did Tony kill someone in the first month and that's why the ghost is after him? You said till 1996.
Yeah, it said it could have been made anywhere between 1970 and 1996. So that was found, and that's not something you can discount. And why was it hidden under the insulation? Another group, not even Tim Wood's group, several other groups have gone in with luminol blacklight finders, whatever those are called. They found blood splatters in the master bedroom closet.
Okay.
There's no explanation for it, but did something violent happen at the house? It's also known with many, many researchers that have gone in there that master bedroom closet is a hotbed of activity. Okay. When you're doing EVP readings or sounds or feelings, it's one of the strongest locations in the house.
Ugh.
So to me, that has nothing to do with MC Finney or like, did something else happen in this house? Maybe even in between renters.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we know too much about.
I'm kind of biting my tongue because I have theories.
Well, tell us the theory, because that's all I have on this, is that this bloody sweater was found.
Tony's involved.
And that's why the spirit's after him?
He's the only one that's been attacked in this way. And she was pregnant, and he could have been the one moving stuff in. Something else was going on.
I hate to think like that, but we've seen so much.
They had separate work shifts.
I don't want to think like that.
I don't
know
either.
Tony, and he's still alive today.
But he's being severely attacked, but no one else has been?
You know, Sally is always the one brought up, but several people have reported seeing a little boy's face peeking out of one of the top windows in the house. When Tim Wood and his group found this, they were wondering if this is connected to the little boy ghost that people have reported seeing looking out the window. So perhaps there is something else that happened at this house that nobody knows. I don't know what they did with that sweater. Like, couldn't the police have done something?
I mean, blood splatter in the closet. Yeah. You at least collect it, right?
I would hope, but I didn't see a lot of this. That's why I'm like, I don't know what to make of this.
Oh,
it does come from...
A cop owns the house. Fuck. Now we just opened up an entire other can of worms.
Why does everything come back to true crime and little kids?
Oh my God.
I don't have a lot of details, but I came across it several times while researching, and I gotta bring it up. We don't know.
Anyone missing in Atchison that no one's talking about? Doesn't even have to be from Atchison.
It doesn't. Missing people every day. Okay, on a lighter note, we've had several other people go in. That was the scariest one that I found. On Travel Channel's popular series Ghost Adventures, Zach, Aaron, and Nick investigated the Sally House with Tony and Deborah tagging along. They said while they were there, some of the strange occurrences that happened were that Tony Pickman began to get welts on his neck from an unknown source. And they had another guest of their group that was scratched on the arm while there. And then a guest psychic that was with them almost passed out. They said that there was also a teddy bear that began moving on its own.
Maybe the whole teddy bear and stuffed animal situation was because of the little boy that they saw.
I don't know. Now my wheels are spinning in my head.
I'm trying to connect things.
Something else happened there, I think.
I think lots of stuff happened there. And when there's just too much energy in one place, it has to spill over.
Another show that went there is the BuzzFeed Unsolved. So Ryan of the two, if you watch that show, sorry that I'm butchering that. But they were spending the night there and doing an investigation and nothing was really happening. And they went down into the basement, and this is on video on a YouTube, and they had it was either a flashlight or their phone, but they had something sitting in this chair, and then they kind of backed away and they just started asking questions. And they said, if you are here, turn on the light or turn off the light. I can't remember which one it was, but they were asking it to do something, and they asked several different questions and nothing happened. And then the last time they said, is there a demonic entity here that wants to make its presence known? And that's when the light changed. And Ryan felt something,
yeah,
like touch him. He left the house and he said he will never, ever, ever, ever go back to the Sally House. And the way he talked about it was like with real terror. There is a belief that in the basement near where the pentagram is, or is covered up at this point, but it's still there, there is a unfinished kind of crawl space area. And I think I have pictures I can share with you guys.
Like, and it looks like further dirt down.
So you're in a basement that has pavement, but there's an area that's kind of like a crawl space with dirt and rocks that you can kind of get into.
Okay.
It's been said there's a lot of activity there, and they think that's where the demonic force kind of
curls up and hides.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk about people, especially tourists that go visit, that's where they feel
they want to crawl inside there.
I don't think you can anymore.
Okay,
they've
kind of
got it blocked off.
Okay, let's not do that. Anybody who's curious.
But
you
that's
send
where
robots.
People have tried to take pictures down there, and that's usually where their cameras won't work. So another big one out there is the Astonishing Legends podcast. I tried to listen to this. It is a four-parter and each part is 3 hours.
Holy shit.
12 hours of talking is a lot.
Yes, it is.
I will say that these hosts of this podcast, they are investigative journalists. And so they go deep.
Yeah.
They seem very credible, seem like great guys. They went to Atchison actually because they aren't even a paranormal investigator type of podcast. They were there for the Amelia Earhart Festival.
Oh, interesting.
And they were speaking on the panel because that's what they do. They do a lot of like missing persons and like
historical
legends. Yeah.
Okay.
And while they were there, they were approached by the Chamber of Commerce and said, hey, you should come by some of the haunted places while you're here. And they had heard of the Sally House and they're like, why not? Let's do it. And so they went there and they met up with another local paranormal investigative team. They were just going to stay in the house. They were thinking of, you know, well, this would be a cool Halloween special. And so that's how they came to be there.
Did they just record the whole time they were there?
So they recorded with this paranormal group and they had EVPs, you know, set up the whole thing for, I think they were there a couple of nights, and they caught something in the nursery. I'm not going to play it here because it is their stuff.
Right. Yeah.
If you don't want to listen to all 12 hours, you can hear this EVP at the end of their second episode. That's what I ended up doing. I listened to their first and second episodes, and they do play what they caught.
Oh.
And it did make the hair on my arm stand up.
Okay.
It is a very guttural, demonic scream, and it lasts for a while. The way that they set it up, and they did this in several rooms throughout the house. They did it in like every single room. But in this room, they said, if there is anything you want to tell us or share, we're leaving the room now. This is your moment. And then they leave the room, and it was like 2 minutes after they left the room, the screaming starts.
Ooh. Just because it's a baby's room doesn't mean it was always a baby's room.
No. And we know the nursery is where they turn the lights off and on with the little baby. And if you want to hear something kind of creepy, you can listen to that. They did that in 2018.
Oh, wow. That sounds like not that long ago, but that's still 6 years ago.
It was a while ago. And then I, of course, am always looking for stories. There were two police officers that did not believe in the paranormal. They just mentioned every time they drove by the Sally house, their radio in their car would go off in crazy ways, or the dome lights of their car would go off and on. Mm. And one time their car died in front of the Sally house.
My brain cannot let go of the sweater and the master bedroom closet. And it's giving Stir of Echo.
Oh, my God. Like
something happened there.
And they're trying to get the police officers.
And it's trying to get everyone's attention.
It's trying to get the police officers' attention specifically, because they're just patrolling the area. And they're like, there's something about that house.
And what if it's less? I'm going to go to jail. I'm going to be taken to court for defamation of blaming people for being murderers. But something happened there. I'm not saying it's one of these two guys, to try and get the attention. Maybe because it's a small town, whoever these people are know the person who did it. And that's why they're specifically trying to get his attention.
Yeah.
Like, you know who did this to me.
It does feel Stir of Echoes.
Or, you know what I'm saying? Something is there that's current. It's not the fucking 1800s. It's now. And that's why it all started in the 90s.
Maybe. Since you brought up Les, I want to talk about his stories. He did not believe in the paranormal. He bought this house along with several others. So he didn't buy this house specifically because of anything. But he did mention he's had a few experiences there himself. And after the Pickmans moved out, he went into the house while getting it cleaned up and ready for the next people. He asked like just a question and he said, hey, I'm going to bring in some paranormal investigators. If you don't want anybody in the house, you let me know. And he said, the way you can let me know is to call the phone and let it ring two times. And then he left and he came back. You know, he just kept coming back and forth doing renovations, getting everything ready after they moved out. And he said he was there one time and the phone rang twice and he picked it up and it was just staticky and he just hung it up. He didn't think about it because he didn't really remember saying what he did. And he said the phone rang again and he picked it up and it was static. And then he was like, whatever, somebody's just fucking with me.
Oh,
and then he stopped and he let it and he noticed it rang two times.
Okay.
And stopped. And then he said like 20 minutes later, it rang two times and stopped. And so that freaked him out.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually went to a priest in the town because he's a religious man. And he asked them and he said, you know, I put this out there and then this happened. And he said the priest told him there is something there and you should not be talking to it. Don't fuck with it. He's like, talking to it is inviting it. And so he took those words to heart and he never really tried to do anything again.
Mm.
He takes the path of just kind of letting them coexist, but not interacting with them.
Yeah. Respecting that they're there, but...
Yes.
Yep.
He did have one other experience. He said he was there by himself working and he was on a ladder. It wasn't a very tall ladder. And he said something definitely kicked the ladder out from underneath him. Like he felt it. He was like, it was like a person came and pulled it.
Yeah.
And he fell. He didn't hurt himself or whatever, but he knew something was fucking with him. And this is a guy, if you see Les, he's just like a good old boy cop kind of guy. I don't think he's going to make stuff up because he doesn't want to be made fun of.
Okay.
And then the last person I'll talk about is Maria. And she is the main Chamber of Commerce lady. I don't really know what her title is, but she's the one
main
that goes and
Chamber
maintains
of
the
Commerce
house.
Lady.
She goes in the house quite often to get it ready in between paranormal investigators coming. And now also with it being a tourist attraction, she's in there quite often. And she has experienced the radio going off on its own. If you go visit the Sally house today, they actually have a radio that's always playing because it said that the ghosts like music.
Oh,
she's been in there many times and she said the radio will just stop playing or sometimes it will start blasting at full volume.
Maybe they like her. Oh, she's here.
Yay, let's turn the music up. Party time. And she's also just felt the presence of something there. She says it's really hard to explain unless you've been there and felt it.
Yeah.
But when you're in the house alone, there's just a different feeling to it.
Mm-hmm.
She will not go in the basement. No. A lot of people say they will not go in the basement. I don't know if I would go in the basement here. I can tell you I was freaked out in the basement of the Lizzie Borden house. There's something about basements. I can only imagine it's even worse in haunted houses.
I didn't even like my basement. And it was furnished and fine. Creepy shit happens in basements.
It's true.
Heat rises, demons lower themselves to the ground. I don't
know. They're down in that limestone.
Exactly. Trapped. They're closer to the earth because that's where they come from.
So there are multiple stories. You can actually visit the Sally House. I think it's under visitatchison.com, and you can see those who've visited, and there are pictures, and there are people who talk about their experiences in the house. There's a lot out there. These are just a small sampling of what I found when researching. If you want to visit the Sally House in Atchison, a self-guided tour is only $20.
Oh, wow.
You get to walk around the house as long as you want.
It is a small house.
Yes. They have the radio playing all the time. They have a spirit box there. I'm not real sure what a spirit box is, but it's on site. You can bring your own little EMF readers if you want. I think they might rent them out. I know that they did at the Lizzie Borden house. See if you find anything. If you want to stay overnight, you can as well.
Hmm.
Overnights at the Sally House begin at 3 p.m. and you get to stay there till 9 a.m. the following morning. The cost is $125 per person with a two-person minimum. So you're shelling out $250 if you want to stay there.
Do they give you a sleeping bag?
No, actually. I was about to read that. There are no beds in the house, so you have to bring your own sleeping bags, blankets, and pillows to sleep. The house does have a restroom, water, and electricity.
That's so good.
Kind of like a very stripped down Airbnb. I read a couple that stayed there that it was furnished like it was still in the 1990s. So you have to be at least 18 years old to stay there. For anyone under 18 who's staying overnight, you have to have a parent or guardian that signs for them to stay there. I would not suggest taking a child.
No. If you're like 17, 18 and they really want to experience it, that's different.
They don't allow you to go in the basement if you stay overnight unless you're part of a paranormal investigation. So they do lock the basement for people who are just staying there.
That's good.
I think that's probably good. They do encourage, if you're staying there, to take photographs, video, audio recordings, and to share whatever you might find.
So they have cameras on you the entire time?
No, I don't think so. Ooh. There's no cameras that I saw that we know of. I've read several stories. Some people said that they found things. There have been many people who didn't make it the whole night. They left in the middle of the night because they were so freaked out. And then there was other people who were like, yeah, I stayed there. It was just a shitty Airbnb. Nothing happened. So who knows what experience you will get. My conclusion to this story is I don't know if the Pickmans are real, if like what they experience, but I'm not one to discount somebody else's story. I don't see anything out there that says this was, you know, complete fraud like we saw in Amityville. I feel like the sightings episode in itself is enough to kind of convince me something's going on here.
I'm going off of, I don't know, my own intuition alone. I felt shit while you were talking.
Interesting.
Whereas I didn't in other things. And that's why I either had to leave them alone and walk away, or I had to tell the story anyway because Amityville was interesting anyway.
Yeah.
But no, I felt shit while you were talking. So I'm going off of that alone. I haven't seen what you've seen in your research and whatnot, but the history of the place, just the who was there before, after, during, right, everything, where this location is. I don't discredit any of that.
And considering the whole town has hauntings.
Yeah.
And that was something else Deborah said. I think she was one that I had read about believing the spirits moving. And she believes there is this demonic force that moves throughout the whole town and comes into the Sally House either through that basement or through the master closet. It wants to.
I mean, just the thought of that is very interesting. They own the town still.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no different than thinking of, you know, the veil. Mm-hmm. We have this veil between the living and the dead, and it's thinner in areas, and maybe that limestone or whatever is going on in the city makes itself more known in areas. Maybe there's a bigger collection of it in an area. Right. There's more energy in one area because a lot happened in this house.
Right.
We don't know who actually lived there the entire time.
We don't.
But we know that there were some evil people.
This was started by people who were pro-slavery.
Seriously.
Those are
my
not
point.
Good people.
Evil people. So shit's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe it's haunted.
One day we're going to talk about the Glick Mansion because it's there too and it has a pretty fucked up history as well. Maybe that demonic entity moves between the two houses.
Maybe everyone is related back then.
Probably.
But that's my point into why maybe Tony, I'm sorry I called you a murderer, but you got to bring stuff up sometimes, okay?
We're just here to question everything.
But maybe he's related to whatever happened in that house if they're from that area.
And they're trying to get his attention specifically.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but to be honest, this is the first time I actually have the creeps about a place we've talked about.
The fact that there are so many people who will not go back in that house creeps me out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Sally House. I can't believe I've never heard of it. Definitely listening to that EVP from the Astonishing Legends podcast. Like I said,
okay, I'm going to have to go listen.
It gave me something. I felt chills.
But now I'm worried. Someone actually go do a better job. I feel like there's a couple modern murders unsolved that have to do with that property. I'm trying not to be a bad screw police, screw men person right now, but gosh darn it, that's it's fucking Stir of Echoes.
We come into every episode being like, we're not going to be those girls today. We're not going to hate on men. We're not going to. Every story ends up here. How does every story end up here? And it's not like we're purposefully looking for these stories.
A bloody sweater in the attic and nothing's done about it. Blood in the master bedroom closet and nothing's done about it. How do they find that in something that's been rented and repainted and things done over and over again other than it being modern? Who's missing?
The sweater's modern. It's after 1970, so.
Stir of Echoes part 3. For the rest of you who go into that house, can you just stop worrying about, oh, is there a presence here? Ask someone, is there a murder I need to solve?
Right.
Can Something's I help going you on. In that way? Thank you.
I don't know. Maybe we need to make a road trip.
You said you wouldn't.
I know, but I'm reframing it after
they don't
our
hurt
discussion.
Women. They
That's
don't hurt
true.
Women.
They only hate men.
Maybe they'd talk to us.
Okay. TBD. We'll let you know.
Don't let Atchison know we're coming.
If they listen to our podcast, they're like, these girls are not welcome here. We'll have to wear disguises. I'm making a cosplay. They'll never know. We'll just look like two little anime girls.
Then we'll really stand out. What are you talking about?
In Atchison?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Alrighty. This was a nice detour from
our norm.
Some of our other, although we ended up in the same place, accusing people of things.
But here's the reality. It's because people are afraid to ask those exact types of questions that things are not solved. The majority of those instances are exactly what I just said. So.
And paranormal investigators going in are just trying to catch sounds from the beyond. They're not thinking about what actually happened. The psychics are. And when the psychics go in there, one of them almost fainted. And the psychics are feeling very strong things coming to them. So maybe we need to get some more psychics in there and try and figure it out.
I don't know. Small town, cops, people missing. That's what I'm assuming.
Always. Every time.
Bible Belt. History that you can't explain. I am in the middle of researching something that has tons to do with kids missing, rape. I'm sorry, all that stuff. So I can't. My brain is already there. Shit happens in small towns. So I think there's something more sinister that went on there recently.
Yeah. I hate that we now have this kind of view of the world.
I know, because it's true and it's all coming out and everywhere we look, it's happening. It's not just this, oh my gosh, that happened one year in that entire
it's
decade.
It's happening
it's
every
literally
month.
Every like
Day.
You could probably look at a bird's eye view of where you live. Every other four streets, something is happening that is at least a gradient of, you know, the worst that you can think of. This is way more prevalent than we could ever imagine it to be. And it's all coming out and we can't ignore that. And it's no longer us being weird, kooky, witchy women thinking it, because every time I turn on anything, it's fucking happening.
It's everywhere, and we're not even trying to seek this out.
We're not.
I'm trying to just do haunted houses.
I'm sorry, Kendra.
And yeah.
But with the recent sweater and that stuff.
I don't know. I'm going to keep following this. We'll see if something comes out of it. But Sally House, if I had to give you my conclusion, I think it's haunted. I think something's going on there. I don't know if it's demonic. I don't know if it's just someone trying to get attention. Something else needs to be uncovered here. And I hope that it is in the future.
I think it's a mixture of things. That was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. I'm like, oh, do I have to pretend?
Pretend what?
To believe.
I told you this was a good one.
It's funny that, you know, I believe, and we talked about this in the beginning, I believe, but it's harder for me to believe stories than my own personal experiences.
I think that's a lot of people.
This was interesting, I do believe. That's just my internal feelings about what we just talked about. So good job, Kendra.
Thank you. Glad you enjoyed it.
Someone go solve everything now.
Yes.
Thank you for listening. This was our 1 year episode.
I cannot believe it, but I'm so proud of us.
And we still have champagne left, so we didn't drink it all yet.
Yes, we still have a little bit. I'm going to pat ourselves on the back for making it. When we started this, we had ambitions, and I think both of us were dedicated and said we would do this, and now we're doing the damn thing.
We are.
So cheers.
And cheers to everyone who's still hanging on or just found us.
Yes.
Thank you.
Keep listening, and if you want to help get exposure for us, really rating us on Apple Podcasts if you can.
Yep.
Leaving comments on YouTube or Apple Podcasts would be really helpful.
That's really the only place you can truly engage.
Right.
Other places allow you to star us, but those are the places where you can actually have a word and say something to us or say something about us. That's where we need exposure.
Yeah. So. And then recommend us to anyone you know that likes this kind of genre of podcast.
And like I've said before, even if it's just the one episode, maybe something specific.
Right.
Hope you had a great St. Patrick's Day if you're in an area where it's celebrated.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's been a year. Thank you.
Thank you all.
We'll see you next week.
And in the meantime,
always stay lucid.
Bye.
Bye.